Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Taylor Petrie, editor of Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. Today, we're excited to have with us Kyle Jepson, who holds an MA in Applied Linguistics from Boston University and a BA in English from Brigham Young University. In his recent article, A Remarkable Vision of Her Father, The Many Uses of in the Book of Alma, he explores a puzzle about the experience of the servant girl Abish in relationship to a vision. People have long wondered about what this vision was, whether it was something that her father had or whether this was a vision that she had about her father. Kyle, welcome. It's so nice to talk to you about your work.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about how you got interested in in the Book of Alma.
Sure. Well, I mean, my undergraduate work was in English linguistics. My graduate work was in applied linguistics. So kind of the nitty-gritty details of language is something that really makes me come alive. But the specific phrase, a remarkable vision of her father, it never even occurred to me in the many times I've read the Book of Mormon that that is ambiguous. But a couple of summers ago, I was at my parents' house. I was hanging out with my brother. We talked late into the night. He's the oldest sibling. I'm the youngest sibling, so there's always a bit of a rivalry here. And we somehow got on the topic of Abish, and I said something like, oh, I think it's so cool that her dad had this vision and was able to impress upon her this faith. And my brother said, wait, who had the vision? And he made this claim, this ridiculous claim that Abish herself had the vision. Remarkable vision of her father meant she saw her vision, her father in a vision. And so I set out, like any good youngest sibling, to prove my brother wrong. And I launched this analysis, just kind of the first version was very loose, just kind of a go to Project Gutenberg to get a plain text version of the Book of Mormon and command F my way to every usage above in that section of Alma. And this pattern emerged that made me think.
Well, before we get into all the details of it, let's back up here and set the scene for our readers. Who is Abish? What is the scene that she appears in the Book of Mormon? And just give us a little bit of background of how we meet her to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. So Abish is one of the very few named women in the Book of Mormon. And she shows up in this story. Ammon, who is one of the sons of Mosiah, who is the Nephite king. The Nephites typically are the good guys. The Lamanites are typically the bad guys. Ammon and his brothers go on a missionary adventure into the world of the Lamanites. And the expectation of all the Nephites they leave behind is that this is a useless endeavor. And for some of the brothers, that it is definitely a very trying experience. But Ammon has this experience where he wins the king over by being a really good servant and then teaches him about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the king and the queen and a whole bunch of members of the household end up being converted. One of the members of the household is this servant named Abish. She's a servant of the queen, and we get just a brief mention of her. Ammon teaches the king and the queen some things, and they have this overwhelming experience. They pass out, right? And all the servants start passing out except for Abish. And we're told just in passing that she had been converted long before Ammon showed up on the scene because of a remarkable vision of her father. And because she's already converted, she runs around. She understands this is the hand of God happening, making something happen. And so she runs around and gathers the people, hoping that they will see it and all be converted. It's not quite that smooth and easy, but eventually it does turn out that way. And so, I had always interpreted that as Abish, as a little girl growing up, her father, whatever his role is, this is the only mention of him. Maybe he was a servant also, who knows? I thought he had some vision and passed that on to his daughter. But because it says a remarkable vision of her father, it can be understood either way. Other parts of the Book of Mormon where we talk about a vision of the Tree of Life, somebody saw the Tree of Life in a vision, right?
Right.
But if we talk about the first vision of Joseph Smith, that's a vision Joseph Smith had, right? And the grammar is the same. So it is, right. It is ambiguous.
So we have that ambiguity, and you and your brother obviously were on opposite sides of this, at least in the initial conversation. And it turns out other people have noticed this ambiguity as well. So what has been the history of scholarship up until this point on resolving this question.
Yeah. What I've noticed is that a lot of scholars have mentioned this. Very few have said more than a single sentence on it. It's just always kind of a passing reference of, man, this is ambiguous. We don't know who had the vision, whether it was her or her father. And a couple of scholars have even said, like, given the patriarchal nature of this society, it was almost certainly the father. But like that's not how God operates, right?
Given the patriarchal nature of the interpreters, that's how we...
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. To put a finer point on it. And so for me, I really wondered if we just look at the way the word of behaves in the Book of Mormon, because that's the pivotal question. Is this saying possession, right? It's a vision of her father in that her father had it, or is it describing the content of the vision? And I thought, well, if we look around at the Book of Mormon, maybe we can find a pattern in the way of is used. And it turns out in the whole Book of Mormon, the word of appears more than, I forget the number, but tens of thousands of times. And there is no way I was going to be able to do that. But something I think a lot of people don't know about the Book of Mormon is its original version, as Joseph Smith dictated it, did have chapter breaks in it. They're not our current chapter breaks. They were much larger chunks, but they're kind of these natural breaks in the book. And so I just using Skousen's earliest text version, I figured out the chunk. I think it's five or six chapters that was a chapter in the original text, and I just studied of in that section to see if there is a pattern that would suggest an interpretation one way or the other.
Yeah, I looked back over the numbers that you gave, and you said there are more than 10,000 uses of the preposition of. You cut it down to just 248 uses of the preposition in Alma 17 to 20, which was a little bit more manageable. And you actually have a bunch of different subcategories for the various ways that of can be used. And you say it's, for the most part, not ambiguous in all of those instances. But there is a question of, is of possessive here, as it is the vision that her father had, or is it about here, which is the vision about her father? And you do an analysis then of the uses of possessive of versus about of in these chapters here. And you notice that there's another distinctive element here that maybe is the key that unlocks it here. Tell us a little bit about what is the kind of thing that pushes you over the edge to it being about rather than of.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, rather than possessive. There we go.
Sure. Yeah. So as I was doing this analysis, I am just like I mentioned, I have a plain text version of the Book of Mormon. I got a download from Gutenberg. I'm just Control F anywhere there's a sentence, I'm copy pasting that into a spreadsheet, and then I'm dragging those instances into different columns. And possession is by far the most common thing of is doing in the Book of Mormon, head and shoulders above all the rest. There are like 10 different categories I put these in, but possession is like almost half of them. And so I'm working on this, and I get done and I look at the spreadsheet. And without doing any real analysis at all beyond that, it just stands out to me that every single instance in that possessive column starts with the word the, which is just, in linguistic data, you don't expect clear patterns that jump out at you. Almost always there's noise. The language is never precise. Even the really hard and fast rules get broken sometimes. And so just seeing that column, and it's all thus, I immediately looked at the other columns. Are they all thus? And no, they're not. And about, which is the significant one we're comparing to, it's almost evenly split, the and a, or no article at all. These definite and indefinite articles. And so for the biggest column to have the least amount of variability was crazy, like totally unexpected. And I redid the analysis because I thought I must have done something wrong. But it held up. It really does seem to be a pattern, at least here in Alma. And that's important because a remarkable vision of her father doesn't start with the. And so if this is possessive, it is the only instance of a possessive phrase in this part of the Book of Mormon that starts with a instead of the. And so now the kind of the burden of proof is on the people who want the standard patriarchal interpretation of this is a vision her father had. This must be a possessive phrase because of the societal patterns of the text. Why is it different then? Why is it the only one that looks different? And so that was the first moment where it's like, okay, Eric has a point. He might win this one.
Well, it's such a fascinating a way of getting at solving this problem of doing this sort of study of linguistics. And it was in a section of the Book of Mormon and not necessarily the entire thing. But it's unlikely that the rest of the Book of Mormon would change that dramatically, right?
Even if it does, the thing is the Book of Mormon's a text of multiple authors, right? So if it turns out Nephi does something totally different, well, who cares? What relevance would that have, right? By keeping it to just this portion of the text, we know that not only is this Mormon's abridgment, but it's Mormon's abridgment of Alma, and it's Alma's retelling of Ammon's story, right? We're not changing narrators here at any point. And so I think it makes a pretty compelling case that this pattern we should expect to be persuasive in this instance, at least.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you sent a long apology letter to your brother conceding his point. But beyond resolving this family dispute, you do weigh in on a little bit of like why it matters here.
Yeah.
What difference it makes. Why do you think this matters?
Well, there's kind of two answers to that. There's the academic research reason, which I'll start with, and the other is a theological reason. But on the academic side of things, as I said, a lot of scholars have noticed this ambiguity and have just kind of seen it and shrugged their shoulders. Even ones who want to say, there are entire papers written about Abish. Abish is a huge focus in the brief theological introduction to the Book of Alma. And authors who really want to engage with their story are just, the rug is kind of pulled out from under them on this point. They say, I wish there was a way we could tell, because wouldn't it be great if Abish had this vision? But it's ambiguous, it's impossible. And now that I feel like I have pretty good linguistic evidence, grammatical evidence that the most likely interpretation is that Abish herself had the vision, now all those scholars are free to explore all the implications of this, right? They can make those claims and arguments that they wanted to make that they just couldn't because they didn't have firm ground to stand on. And I really, if this paper has any sort of legacy, if it ever gets quoted by anyone, I hope that's what it enables people to do. But then to transition to some of those theological implications, the Book of Mormon teaches us a lot about revelation and how God works with people and speaks to man and stuff. But the pattern we see is almost all the prophets are Nephite royalty, right? These are kings. These are the social upward classes. Once the monarchy is done away, It's you know, the high priests and the chief judges who are having revelations. To think about Abish, who is not a Nephite, who is not a man, who is not royalty, right? A female Lamanite servant is about as far down on the rungs of social hierarchy as you can get in the Book of Mormon. For her to have a remarkable vision that converts her to the gospel of Jesus Christ at a time when Nephites are not even bothering to preach to the Lamanites anymore, is really compelling. This really tells the story that God does speak to everyone everywhere. You know, the bond and free, rich and poor, male and female, black and white that we get elsewhere in the Book of Mormon is really shown in action here. If it's true that Abish had this vision, then literally every person in every society has access to God directly, which is a message that I think within Mormon tradition and within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has precedent. We believe that, we teach that, but we don't really have a scripture story of the Book of Mormon that we can point to that is like, yes, God will talk to anyone. You know, Nephi has all these excellent experiences. The brother of Jared has all these excellent experiences, but they were leading groups of people through the wilderness, right? Poor little me living here in Boston, like, why would God ever speak to me? Well, why would God ever speak to Abish? Because God has plans for us and knows us and can talk to whoever he very well pleases. And so I think that's a very exciting takeaway from what is honestly some pretty tedious grammatical analysis.
Well, it was a huge gift to us, and I think all readers of the Book of Mormon who can benefit from this analysis, as you say, to have a woman, a Lamanite servant, having a vision in the Book of Mormon is a remarkable statement, and I'm really, really grateful for all of the hard work that that went into this research, Kyle. So thank you so much for sharing with us. Thanks for joining us today to talk to us about it.
Yeah, thank you.
We hope that our listeners have enjoyed the conversation and have learned something new. If you'd like to learn more, check out Kyle Jepson, A Remarkable Vision of Her Father, The Many Uses of in the Book of Alma, in the spring 2024 edition of Dialogue, and explore other resources on this topic. To our listeners, thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues, and don't forget to leave us a review or get in touch with any comments or questions. We hope that you'll find this episode and future episodes helpful and enjoy the whole range of the shows and the Dialogue Podcast Network.
Is it that late? Dad will be here any minute. Better tell Mother she's needed in the kitchen.
Ah, yes, the classic nuclear family. Dad, Mom, two kids, a white picket fence, and everybody knows their role. I grew up believing this was the one right way to be a family, and I believed that until I started getting to know real people who didn't fit that mold. We're watching this old nuclear family model explode in real time, but we don't need to hit the panic button. We can let curiosity lead the way. I'm Blair Hodges, host of Family Proclamations. I'm on a quest to find out everything I can about family, gender identity, and sexuality, and I want you to join me. On this podcast, I'm talking to best-selling authors about marriage, divorce, cohabitation, single adulthood, parenting, childlessness, adoption, fostering, gender identity, human biology, and lots more. We'll learn about different families and identities, past, present, and future. So please get ready to surrender old stereotypes and embrace new perspectives. There's no single way to be a family, and every kind of family has something we can learn from. Check out Family Proclamations anywhere you get your podcasts and at familyproclamations.org. Presented by Fireside with Blair Hodges.
Ah, dinner time. This is the time for pleasant discussion in a thoroughly relaxed mood.
Dialogue Podcast Network.